Hello, everyone, and welcome to a very special podcast of honor. You might notice that the person talking right now does not have a British accent. That is because Matt Waters is no doubt very busy with holiday shoppers in the UK getting ready for Christmas and whatever else Matt Waters does with his time. But I am Jerome Cusan, and I am the substitute host for the podcast of honor. The good news is that unlike Davey Richards, Matt Waters still has his spot on the podcast of honor. So let's get to our discussion here tonight. We are going to be discussing a number of topics, including Davey Richards' departure from Ring of Honor one way or the other. We're going to discuss Glory by Honor as it was shown on television for free over the span of 3 weeks. And Ari and I specifically are going to really have an interesting discussion about some of the editing choices made in the 8-man tag, plus some overall thoughts. And then we are going to preview Final Battle 2013, the biggest Ring of Honor show of the year, typically. So we're going to get into all of that. And the co-hosts, as usual, first off, he is the webmaster of this very website and essentially makes this thing go around. And he is an all-around person, as Ari Bernstein would like to say. Chris GST is here. Chris, how's it going?
It's going pretty well. I have to say that I've seen Matt Waters' recent photos. I'm just disgusted that Justified, that album, I think was $5.99 in pounds. So that's like, what, like $8 US? That's ridiculous. Did they not realize how old that album is? That's crazy.
Of course, also, Ari Bernstein is here. Ari, how's it going? Are you excited to be back here on the podcast of honor?
Yeah, of course. Happy post-Thanksgivica to you, Jerome, and to Chris GST. And I hope your turkey stuffed latkes were really good and your cranberry-filled jelly donuts were equally scrumptious. I had the best chocolate lava cake I've ever had in my entire life over the weekend, and that was just one of many different highlights, culinary highlights that, now I've gained back quite a bit of the weight I lost, and I am very depressed, but, the miracle of lights is here, and I'm very happy to celebrate, and I'm very happy to be on the podcast to talk about Ring of Honor. It has been a while.
So we have a number of different topics, as I said before, to talk about, some of which are actually relevant to the shows that are taking place. But we're going to start off with Davey Richards, as he is apparently departing Ring of Honor. He will not get even a farewell match at Final Battle. It was apparently going to be announced that Davey Richards was out of Final Battle with a neck injury. And then Davey Richards sort of jumped the gun and made the announcement himself that he would not be at Final Battle to tag up with Eddie Edwards to wrestle Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong. And he made very clear that it was Ring of Honor's decision, not his own, to appear at the show. And then in another statement, he talked about how upset he was about having his farewell match. I will give a couple of quotes here. He said, "A company I've given literally everything in my body for time and time again, driven crazy amounts of hours to save the company, money on flights worked for reduced payoffs were down, etc. It's wild, man. It's such a different place now than when I started, not saying better or worse, just different." And he thanked the fans of Ring of Honor, and perhaps one of the more interesting quotes that he gave in his statement was, he said that ROH is all about heart. I hope they find theirs again. He encouraged everyone to continue to support the rest of the locker room. And then he thanked everyone. So Davey Richards is off of the Final Battle card, and a former Ring of Honor world champion and a former multiple-time Ring of Honor tag team champion is apparently done with the company. Rumors are circulating that he is going to be going down to WWE. However, nothing has been confirmed at this time. After Davey Richards released his second statement this morning, this afternoon, Ring of Honor released their own statement about the situation, and they basically laid it on the line that it was supposed to be Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards Awards in sort of a dual farewell match, wrestling Roderick Strong and Jay Lethal at the Hammerstein Ballroom. And Richards and Edwards did not have any appearances, fueling the rumors about WWE. And they made clear, Ring of Honor did, that, however, due to recent events, Davey Richards has been removed from the final battle match by ROH management due to his unprofessionalism and unreliability with the company. And then it was announced that a mystery tag team partner would be selected by Nigel McGuinness, sort of going back into the kayfabe realm. And shortly after that, it was Jimmy Jacobs basically saying that he wanted a spot in Final Battle, teasing that we will get to all of that stuff about Final Battle later on in this podcast. But I want to send it over to Chris right now. How did this this whole mess between Davey Richards and Ring of Honor get started, Chris? I know that you sort of have a unique perspective and can really offer some background as to how this heat started.
Right. So I write for the Total Wrestling Magazine out of the UK, and I actually do the Ring of Honor reviews for the magazine, and they were, I guess you would say, lucky enough now, looking back in hindsight, they got an interview with Davey Richards, I believe it was either an SWE, that's Southeast or Southwest Entertainment, or a Rev Pro show in the UK, and they got to talk to him, and he did what I thought was a really good interview, and he spoke candidly, as we all know Davey Richards does. Sometimes he doesn't have that filter on, and, you know, that's just Davey. I think that that's his honesty. And he said some probably not too pleasing things, stating that he didn't feel like the tag team titles or the world title were at the level that they used to be. And you know what? That's, from my perspective, that's kind of true, in the sense that when he came back, he obviously, Ring of Honor management heard about his quotes, and he put out a second article with Total Wrestling Mag. You can find that out at twmag.co.uk. And he just made clear that what he was referring to was the past, the history of Ring of Honor. And he mentioned guys like Joe and Brian Danielson. And he was very honest. He said that he included himself in the part of the Ring of Honor that didn't quite live up to what the past had, quite up to that expectation. So, you know, I guess Ring of Honor didn't take that very kindly. And this happened. And I think it kind of took everyone aback a little bit. It had been reported, I believe, by The Observer first, and then PW Insider and The Torch, that it was because of this interview. My perspective on it is that, you know, we all know Davey can be unfiltered, and he can be honest to a fault. It's just like any other, you know, athlete, you know, this whole sports thing, you know, they say something, and then their first defense is it was taken out of context, which, you know what, maybe it was. Maybe Ring of Honor management didn't realize that he was kind of honoring, if you want to say, no pun intended, the past. Because when he explained what he meant, it kind of makes sense. I think it's something that fans have been saying for a while, that the current Ring of Honor product, to some, is not quite at the level of what it used to be. You know, and that's a subjective view. Should he have said it, you know, working for them? No, not very smart. But you know what? At least the guy was honest. He didn't put out a PC answer that I know a lot of our listeners have said that when they hear it, I mean, we all know it. We're pretty smart. We know when we hear a guy is just kind of giving us a fluff answer. Davey Richards didn't do that. And, you know, I guess he's being punished for it, whatever. But I personally don't hold it against him.
So we'll get to Ari Berenstein's thoughts in a moment. And Davey Richards, of course, has had an unbelievable legacy in the company, going back to his debut back in June of 2006. You know, he started out hot and heavy in a feud with Ring of Honor veteran Jimmy Rave, was, of course, a part of the No Remorse Corps when he turned heel. And he would go on to multiple tag team title reigns with Rocky Romero, and then entered into a tag team with Eddie Edwards. And basically in a situation where he was supposed to sort of be the A guy, Eddie Edwards, as it turned out, would win the Ring of Honor TV title and the world title before Davey Richards did. Edwards and Richards would have a series of matches that have received some mixed reviews. But Richards, of course, went on to win the Ring of Honor world title and had a successful 10-month title reign before losing to Kevin Steen. Lots of controversy around there. Davey Richards did an interview with High Spots that got himself in some hot water with Steen, as well as with Jim Cornette. And Davey Richards has had a bit of a reputation on the independent and seen with some promoters. You know, you could go down the list. He has had run-ins with promoters from AIW to AAW to a number of promotions in Iowa, to the former All-American Pro Wrestling. There was an issue with that. So Davey Richards, probably one of the more controversial figures in independent wrestling over the last few years. And that doesn't even mention what happened with Dragon Gate back in January of 2010. A lot of controversy there. So apparently the relationship between Davey Richards and Ring of Honor is over. And Ari Berenstein, I want to get your thoughts on this as a longtime Ring of Honor fan and someone who has seen Davey Richards from the very beginning, as all of us, as all three of us have, and getting to see his career. Let's start first by talking about sort of, you know, the separation and your thoughts on that.
Sure. And definitely, I believe I saw, I don't know if I saw his first match against Jimmy Ray, but I saw one of his first matches in Ring of Honor. So sure, I've definitely been witness to Davey's career in Ring of Honor pretty much since the beginning. And it's very interesting. He, as he said in his own statements, there's been a lot of ups and downs and, you know, some controversial stuff, both in Ring of Honor and out of Ring of Honor. This separation right now, though, I mean, I think, you know, everyone kind of has started seeing that this was, you know, the end of the road here for Davey and also for Eddie Edwards, as they kind of take those next steps to get into WWE. And I think many of us have read the stories about them getting was essentially a trial tryout, you know, as opposed to being definitely signed to NXT. But they made an appearance on NXT television, and they'll be known as the American Pitbulls and under different names than Davey Richards and Eddie Edwards. But, you know, their future in WWE isn't guaranteed. But I think we all kind of saw the end of the line for them on Ring of Honor television and house shows, at least. I think both of them were losing a lot more than they were winning lately. And I think, you know, there were a lot of rumors swirling that Final Battle was going to be their sort of final curtain call. So it's very interesting how all this broke as far as the news and the sort of the fact that Davey Richards is right out in front, controlling to some extent the message of his exit. And Ring of Honor very rarely makes note of the backstage issues that it has with people, but the fact that Davey was so forthcoming forced them to put into their match announcements you know, that Eddie, it would be Eddie Edwards now in a mystery partner against Jay and Roderick Strong, that it was because of Davey's unprofessional actions and conduct that they decided to part ways with him. And it's intriguing because this is something very different than we've seen from, for the most part, in Ring of Honor. I mean, the Ring of Honor locker room is often the front story you get is, you know, oh, it's like a very welcoming locker room. It's a very familial locker room. Everyone's there to support each other. And I think that's pretty true for the most part, although Ring of Honor itself has had plenty of interesting politics and stuff happen from behind the scenes. But for Davey Richards, a guy who no stranger to controversy, you know, this is sort of it's a very interesting way to go. There are some wrestlers who have been a huge part of Ring of Honor who have never had a official fond farewell. Guys like Austin Aries come to mind, and Aries had his own political issues with the people in charge of Ring of Honor at that time. And it is, you know, El Generico and Colt Cabana. I mean, Generico did have the ladder match a year ago with Kevin Steen, which was his sort of farewell, but there's no new story that he and ROH had. We were very kind of cool in terms of that. But for the fans, to say goodbye to Davey Richards, whether you liked him or whether you hated him. To not have that opportunity is very striking. Richards has been a huge part of Ring of Honor over the last 5-6 years. And we can talk about it a little bit more, I guess, if you got from your perspectives, guys. But, I mean, for me, this is a guy who Daniel Bryan, gave him the mantle of being the next big wrestler, the wrestler of Ring of Honor. And I think for a long time, he was the standard bearer of being the kind of wrestler Bryan Danielson was, at least in the ring. I don't quite think he got the complete love of the audience, but I think for a long time, he was head and shoulders the guy who you could point to and say, you want to watch a Ring of Honor show because this guy is going to deliver in the ring on this match. This is going to be an unbelievable match. Unfortunately, I think somewhere along the lines, he got caught up in the pressure of all that. Maybe when he became champion, maybe before that, maybe a little bit after that. I don't know. So Richards in Ring of Honor is certainly... It's the culmination right now of a very long career he had in the company. And I think his absence is going to be felt when Eddie Edwards is in there in the ring and there's a mystery partner. And whether or not it's, someone coming back or someone on the roster who needs a spot, I think what a lot of people are going to have is on their mind is that should have been Davey Richards wrestling with Eddie Edwards because they've been so tied together for the last 3 to 4 years. So it's going to be an interesting experience going to Final Battle and seeing that unfold.
And Chris, your thoughts on the departure of Davey Richards?
Yeah, I'm kind of mixed on that. I feel that they're just missing out. I know that when the news came out, Ari, I think you said something very similar, so I'm sure you'll expand on that, but I just feel like they're missing out on something. I mean, yes, was it unprofessional of what he said? Probably not the greatest thing to say, but you know what? A lot of the fans recognize Davey Richards for Ring of Honor. You know, he's a reason why they go to the shows. I firmly stand by the statement that he's one of their top draws. You know, Grant, no matter what you thought of his series of matches with Roderick Strong and Eddie Edwards, yeah, we kind of got tired of seeing them, but there's no doubt that he is a great wrestler. You know, not everyone likes his style, sure, but if you do like his style, he's one of the best at it, and it's going to be something missing from the show without him. And, he kind of jumped the gun, and Ring of Honor kind of was forced to put that statement out there. So it is what it is, and I'll be interested to see, Ari, your response to it when you see Ring of Honor, Final Battle live, because it's going to be a hole there.
I think it was smart for Davey to get the jump on Ring of Honor because, you know, it's something that very rarely happens. And, you know, I think a lot of people will read into it what they want to read into it. Yes. And Davey tried to, I guess, in a way, babyface himself, even though he was also simultaneously saying that, you know, he felt the Ring of Honor that he was dealing with now had changed, that there was missing some of the heart. I mean, honestly, I think I left last year at Final Battle 2012, very disappointed with my personal experience there. And there are previous podcasts of Honor where I've talked about it, so no need to rehash. And I stopped watching for quite a bit. And what brought me back in was in part some of the quality from the Ring of Honor title tournament, and I went to Manhattan Mayhem 5 with my cousin, and I actually wouldn't be going to Final Battle 2013 if it wasn't for my cousin Jay, who is going to be in New York for that weekend, and hence, you know, he basically said, you know, let's go hit up the wrestling again, and, you know, do you want to go see it? And I'm like, okay, we can do general admission again, that's fine. Mikio, who appears on these podcasts from time to time, he hasn't gone to a Ring of Honor show since Final Battle 2012. So for some people, the thrill is gone, I think. And for me, I'm going because it's going to be a fun bonding experience with my cousin. And we've been following wrestling together since we were kids. And, it's always fun to go hang out with him for these things. In addition to that, I liked the Jay Briscoe, Adam Cole, Michael Elgin triangle. I thought that was pretty compelling. And the other thing was to see, there was the Young Bucks and Adrenaline Rush match. That was a number two. And then number three would be the Edwards and Richards, the fact that I would go see live their last matches and their last match together and their last match in Ring of Honor. So now it's possibly and probably Eddie Edwards' last match in Ring of Honor, you know, unless something happens with their WWE deal. I try to remain optimistic about all that, but it's probably the last time we'll, you know, Ring of Honor fans can get to see them live. And now we won't be able to get to see Davey Richards live. So, it was Ring of Honor's right, their management's right to pull him from the booking, and he was on thin ice with them to begin with. But I think ultimately they're doing a disservice to the fans, and I think I'm going to use a phrase that's unfortunately become a cliche in the last few months. And you know what's best for business, what's best for the fans in this circumstance is to sort of put all the backstage stuff aside and give the fans who are paying a ticket a show. And Davey Richards was a part of that ticket. And I think in many ways that the Richards and Edwards finale is a draw. Not as big a draw as, let's say, Nigel McGuinness's and Bryan Danielson's final match at Glory by Honor 8. But certainly it would be a spectacle, something to see and something to celebrate. And the fans don't get that anymore because wrestling's politics happens and it affects people. And it affects Davey Richards' life. It affects the fans who are, you know, maybe expected to see Richards and Edwards together as a team, and now they don't get to see that.
I think it's very interesting how this all has come about so quickly. And it's funny because I feel like nobody was talking about Final Battle before this happened. And now all the conversation is about the individual who is not going to be in Final Battle in about 2 weeks.
It's very interesting because Ring of Honor has been despite the great great tournament for the World Heavyweight title, the singles title, and some of the good quality matches that have been over the last few months, Ring of Honor has been very cold. Final Battle 2013 is quite cold, and I know you and I, Jerome, have we haven't talked about it in detail, but we have talked about sort of on the surface the talent depth issues and where Ring of Honor is going in the future with using their talent, and it's unfortunate that they just really haven't been able to get the people compelled to want to check out Final Battle, because from what, you know, from people I see on Twitter and Facebook and, you know, just talking to people, in real life, you know, who know about Ring of Honor and I talked to you about it. They weren't jazzed about Final Battle. And I don't know if that's going to change in the next couple of weeks. And like I said, I wasn't particularly jazzed. I wasn't going to go. Until my cousin asked me to. So yeah, this was a very interesting time for all this news to break out, and it may actually end up helping Ring of Honor quite a bit because the attention is now on them. You know, as the saying goes, there's no such thing as bad publicity, and each side, Richards has his side, and Ring of Honor has their side, and the most important thing coming from this is that a lot of people know now that Final Battle 2013 is happening in 2 weeks. So we'll see if that helps in any way.
It's really strange because it's just the feeling, and I think I blame a lot of it on the general feeling that Ring of Honor right now is not, it's not very positive. And I mean, because you look at the card, and I know we're going to go over it, it's a pretty good card. And if you were to just tell people the talents, if you weren't to tell them what the promotion is that's holding it, and you just told them the card straight up, people would probably be excited for it. And then you mention Ring of Honor, and it almost feels like they're like, oh, okay. And it's like, why is that? I mean, I'm not saying I can that anyone's wrong for feeling that way, but I do think Ring of Honor has a great talent base, and for whatever reason, people just aren't excited about it.
It is funny, though. I will say this. Having caught up a whole bunch of TV, and maybe it is something Ring of Honor is doing as far as production-wise, I have noticed some good upgrades in the video and the quality and all that, especially when you see it on their website, when you see the TV shows. you know, the Adam Cole Michael Elgin title match from Death Before Dishonor definitely didn't seem all that hot, but future episodes, like a lot of the Glory by Honor 12 tapings and some of the other house shows, they seem to have good reactions from the live crowd. So,
well, Glory by Honor was in Chicago, right? Yeah, Chicago.
So
it's funny because they drew one of their smallest houses ever for that show.
Right. So I don't know if it's like audio sweetening or whatever, but it certainly seems like for those people who do attend the shows that, you know, they've been into some of the recent events. But I mean, that may not necessarily translate to the internet in terms of buzz or to sort of a larger scale. Now, I'm sure they're still going to get plenty of people to show up to the Ring of Honor show in New York. New York is their biggest, one of their biggest venues. Also for Manhattan AM5, attendance was smaller than previous shows. So I don't know if that is a trend that is happening where even New York is shrinking, you know, maybe instead of 1,200. Well, you know, the bigger venue, the downstairs venue, held 2,200 at one point. And Bryan Danielson versus Takeshi Morishima at the final battle, that had like 2,200 people.
I think that's still their record, right?
It might be their record for that venue. And then, I mean, they've done pretty well here and there since then. I mean, you know, the Davey Richards Eddie Edwards match did fantastic. The recent live event, Manhattan only had like about 1,000 people there. It was one of their smallest downstairs venue, the Hammerstein Ballroom Center, instead of the Grand Ballroom upstairs. So, It is very cold right now, and that's unfortunate because I think Adam Cole and Michael Elgin and even Jay Briscoe are doing some of the best work they've done. I mean, Adam Cole is phenomenal at PWG, and I think we've always talked about let him show that in Ring of Honor, and now he is showing all that great heel work in Ring of Honor, and I'm just loving it, and I just don't know if enough people know about it. I mean, you know, I'm sure people are watching on TV, but it's not translating for some reason. So I don't know if you, Chris Jerome, if you could follow up on that and make of that what you will.
I mean, I think it's a very complicated situation that Ring of Honor has itself involved with, and I think this is a very good transition into discussing the recent television that both Ari and I have watched, and I believe Chris watched the full version of the Champions versus All-Stars match. And Ari, I guess for me, watching the Glory by Honor on television, I don't know if this came across to you, but it didn't seem like the in-ring standard of a Glory by Honor was met as nearly as much on this show, based on what I've seen from the television, as was seen on previous Glory by Honor events. And my hunch is because the matches were being taped for television.
Yeah, I think that's a part of it. And I do have to go with a caveat that I haven't seen all the matches on the entire Glory by Honor card and TV episodes because they've split them up. I definitely didn't see Strong versus London, and I know that received a lot of positive attention, a lot of praise.
That match was very, very good.
Okay, so without having seen that, and also having only seen the abbreviated television version of the main event, the Champions versus All-Stars 8-man elimination tag, I don't know if I can say with enough qualification that you know this audience of the show was more better than other Glory by Honor shows. And obviously, you know, you go to the standard bearers of Glory by Honor 4 with, you know, Danielson versus James Gibson, and, you know, Danielson winning his title, and Glory by Honor 5 Night 2, Danielson versus Kenta, Glory by Honor 6 with, Misawa.
There was Misawa and Kenta and Marufuji. I mean, Glory by Honor used to be the show where we knew Ring of Honor was going to spend the money and fly in some talent. And
Glory by Honor was basically Ring of Honor's best show of the year.
Yeah.
Supercard
of Honor was in there too.
Supercard of Honors usually were big, and Final Battles became huge.
Top three.
It was definitely one of the four. If there were the four of Ring of Honor, that was part of it. Sure.
But even something, I mean, Glory Bound Honor 7 was not terrific by any means. I think it was a bit of a, sort of the end of the Gabe Sapolsky run. So you sort of saw some of the burnout he was experiencing at the time. And, excuse me, and I really don't know, I mean, if you ask me to remember the events of Glory Bound Honor 9, 10, and 11, I'm sorry, but it's actually kind of a blur. I don't remember. Glory Bound Honor 9 was Kings of Wrestling versus Wrestling's Greatest Tag Team, I think. And that was an okay show. Was Glory Bound Honor 10, was that the Ladder War, Ladder War 3, I think? I don't remember.
There was definitely a Glory Bound Honor that does not exist according to Ring of Honor television.
Yeah, I don't know. It has become watered down, but I don't think it's the event itself. I think it may just be a function of the, as we were, as I mentioned before, talent depth and what the booking is. I like the booking of the elimination tag match. Maybe Jerome feel differently, but I like that. First of all, Michael Elgin and Adam Cole continue to have a lot of attention being paid to them. I think these guys are two of the best on the independent scene, and their feuds, their matches in PWG are epic. Their matches in Ring of Honor are, this exchange that they had, I thought was really great. Not quite the level of PWG stuff, but there's very few stuff that, there are very few things in Ring of Honor that can get to that level at this point, even using the same talents. But I like the booking. I like the fact that Elgin was sort of outnumbered and had to fight back. I thought some of the things he did was devastating. I wasn't a fan as far as the presentation of the show, of the matches on DVD.
That was bad.
on television. Yeah. On DVD, I don't know because I haven't seen the full match. But on television, I thought the editing of some of the things, some of the scratches, the way they move to the next segments, is very harsh, very unpleasant, and it's sort of just like we went from a moment to another moment where we didn't quite understand what was going on. And I thought that could have been done a lot better, but I mean, as far as putting over the talent, I actually thought it put over almost just about everyone in that match, and the Hooplas, the Hoopla Hotties, I think they got their share of the attention too. And you built out of that Red Dragon and Outlaw Inc. Outlaw Inc. finally got their hands on them. You have Jay Lethal had his hero comeback where he fought back from an injury. He had a great table spot. I mean, there were things in the match I really enjoyed, but I mean, that's just me personally, and I think maybe you feel differently, Drew. I'm not sure.
I mean, I don't really want to talk about the match quality because I think the way that match was completely hacked up, it's impossible to tell. So I can't really say, the match was great. I mean, obviously the guys worked really hard. When you work for 80 minutes, there's a lot of work that goes into that. So I guess for me, the questions that I always have about a match like this is why does a match like that need to go 80 minutes when especially when you're shooting an event specifically for television, why does a match? I feel like you're just at a certain point, you're doing a match that goes 75 minutes just for the sake of doing a match that goes 75 minutes. And given the television presentation, I think the match could have gone 40 minutes, maybe non-elimination, and everybody would have been better off. And I also think that a problem that I had with the booking came in the way that Bobby Fish was eliminated. Bobby Fish was undefeated, but he was not pinned in Ring of Honor. And it sort of felt like, oh, Michael Elgin just pinned Bobby Fish and Bobby Fish was eliminated. And I feel like that moment of Bobby Fish getting pinned should have meant a lot more in a title match situation. Or, something to where they build a split between O'Reilly and Fish, with Fish saying, I've never been pinned and you've cost us the titles twice or something like that. And then, maybe O'Reilly gets the big win against Fish. So I think that would be my biggest argument against the booking of that match being elimination, was the Bobby Fish's first pinfall loss in Ring of Honor pretty much felt inconsequential, even though the announcers did go out of the way to mention it. but I just felt like there was a better way to go with that. And, you know,
yeah,
I
can see that.
You know, and there's nothing inherently wrong with Michael Elgin just dominating his way through everyone. but, you know, it just feels like Matt Taven has had that Ring of Honor TV title for 8 months, and neither he nor the title exactly have been elevated because of it. So, I mean, but that's more of a minor complaint. I think that it's very tough to evaluate that 8-man tag. Roderick Strong and Paul London was the best match of the entire card. We'll get into Kevin Steen and Michael Bennett a little bit later when we talk about Final Bennett. But someone among us has watched the full 75-minute version of this match. Chris GST is a warrior. Chris GST is a warrior for having gone through this. Chris,
I mean, I guess I'm just a warrior because I went through it twice, because I did rewatch it not too long ago. And that was also why I haven't caught up on a lot of the other TV, because I knew it was coming. And I remember that, what was it? It was the November 16th episode. That was what they showed it on. I remember that it clocked in at like at 50 minutes. So even then, after getting the results and I knew that it was, I think it was like a 73-minute match, it was like, the TV itself is 23 minutes shorter than the match. So I'm kind of interested
to hear. They actually show the entrances. Why did everybody get individual entrances? That always.
On the DVD, you know, I do kind of fast forward through that because that's, you know, it's an entrance.
Which you should do. I mean, I do that too. Let's suck in ourselves.
So they actually showed all the entrances on TV too. See that kind of stuff to me, I'm now not really looking forward to seeing the edit. So I'll be interested to hear what you two have to say about it, because I will say this. If you were to just take this match and put it in its own just weird universe where you knew the stories that were entangled, you know, you have CNC Wrestle Factory wanting a tag team title shot ad nauseum against Red Dragon. You kind of had that fringe of Jay Lethal being the number one contender to the TV title, though it was like he is the number one contender, but he's just there. There was no... I believe he beat someone to become number one contender, but still is just kind of like, okay, Jay Lethal, he's no longer going after the title, he's going after the TV title. Great. And then, of course, you have Elgin being the man that Adam Cole defeated for the title, and then, of course, I believe he super kicked him in the back of the head or hit him in the back of the head with the title. The story within itself was good in the sense that Adam Cole did the typical heel thing of, he didn't want to get in when Michael Elgin was in control. He always came in. And it was weird because they told it through Matt Taven, of all things. And I know, Jerome, I kind of want to know whether your feelings on Matt Taven has changed, because I do think Taven did his role well here. He was the guy that kind of took the brunt of the punishment for Elgin and kind of forcing us to go like, okay, when are we going to see Elgin versus Cole? Until we finally got at the end. So that part was cool. You know, I thought that part kind of made sense. The CNC Wrestle Factory, they were just there, you know? Like, it was like...
I have a lot to say about the booking of those two guys.
Yeah, because it was like, they were... for most of the match, they were the guys that got beat on until, okay, let's do the dives over the ropes. And then there was the point after Cedric got pinned and eliminated. Then it was almost like, wait, is Caprice going after Matt Taven? Does he want it? Because it kind of told the story of, okay, Caprice kind of feels like he can be a singles wrestler now. Without really making that nice organic thing of like, okay, my tag team partner is no longer here. I'm going to have to fight up against Fish and O'Reilly. Because it didn't feel like he won it. It felt like he did more offense against Taven. And it's like, if you're not the guy going after the TV title, then why are you putting so much effort to pin him? And then,
didn't Cedric, or maybe it was Caprice, somebody got a near fall on Adam Cole during that.
That was Cedric. Yeah, no. And I thought that kind of tied into what, I mean, I guess, should we say, slight spoilers, we know that they split up and they're going to both go on singles runs.
That's what I was going to get to.
Yeah, so I guess you could kind of say this was the foreshadowing for that. But still, the focus of the match is supposed to be each guy on the All-Star team is going after a specific title. And of course, they did kind of tell the story on commentary that Cedric and Caprice were like, oh, hey, we could get a pin on the world champion. And what would that do for us? So they did tell that kind of, but it was kind of on the fringe.
I think the focus of the hype, though, was that if you pinned Adam Cole, you got the Ring of Honor World title shot. So, yes. I mean, obviously, as a tag team, you know, your focus should be on the other tag team. But I think
But my point is that once Cedric was gone, yeah, but once Cedric was gone, then Caprice, it kind of just seemed like Caprice just transitioned and said, hey, you know what, I don't care about the tag titles anymore. I want to go after the TV title. And maybe that was just because that Taven was in there a lot.
I don't agree with that.
Well, okay, then when I was watching it, it just seemed like O'Reilly and Fish were beating up Caprice, but when Caprice was on a lot on most of his offense, it was against Taven. Maybe that was just because it just happened to be Taven in the ring. But
you need someone to take the heat, and if you're going to focus on Elgin as the guy getting all the shine, and Lethal is sort of he got hurt and then he came back, then you've got to have CNC take the bulk of the match.
I kind of want to know what your guys' thoughts were on that too, because I thought that was kind of Lethal to whatever that the second Hoopla Hottie's name is, and they went through the table.
Casey Ray.
Yeah, in the full, to like you guys mentioned, I watched the full thing. Man, did it seem like he went through a table and they took the girl to the back, and it's like, and even Carino kind of made some comments on this during the commentary. It was like, yeah, this is kind of an inordinate amount of time for Lethal to just be laying there. And yes, this was to get the heat on Elgin, so he got beat up by all four guys. But still, I was like, okay, we've seen in the past guys go through tables and they're just back up. Okay, take a little bit of time, but
I thought that table bump was nasty. I thought it looked nasty, but it was wicked.
Yeah, because it almost seemed like he hit the super kick and then he fell, but he kind of pulled the girl with him, and it was like, oh crap, we are now actually falling. We can't go back. So it was a scary fall. And I'm not saying that he didn't get legit hurt. Maybe he did. I'm not saying he didn't, but it's one of those things. Okay, it's just one of those things that while I'm watching a match, I can't turn that part of my brain off. It was just, it's very similar to, and you guys mentioned this, we talked about a little bit off air. They didn't show Bobby Fish hitting Elgin with a chair after he was eliminated?
I don't remember that. I don't think that happened, or at least they didn't show it on TV.
Okay, so in the match, he hit Bobby Fish, got eliminated, then he hits Elgin with a chair, which was supposed to lead to, you know, oh, Cole might be able to get the pin here. And they mentioned on commentary that, oh, well, Fish can't get eliminated because he's already out of the match. And I'm in my head, I'm like, if this was a normal match, Adam Cole would have been disqualified because someone interfered on his behalf. And if the rules were this match was that, oh, technically we're going to be kind of lax with the rules, it's no DQ, well, then why didn't people just use chairs from the get-go? It's just, I know it's nitpicking, but it's just one of those things that it's in my head. I cannot turn it off while I'm watching the match. It didn't ruin it for me. I just thought that, oh, well, that's kind of, it's kind of weird. If they could have done that from the beginning, why didn't they?
Chris, was the chair shot to the head or was it to the back?
It was to the head and it was protected. So that was good. Elgin clearly got his head up.
Maybe the reason they may not have put it on TV is because even though it was protected, it was still a chair shot to the head. So
maybe, yeah.
They don't want to show
Please think of the children.
I think the end sequence
I thought was really well done. And I know that that I think Mike Elgin and Adam Cole really played that last, it was definitely over 8 minutes, man. If you just encapsulate that by itself, it was a great finish. Yeah, okay, yeah, it was
14 minutes whole cloth, they said, because they said like an hour.
Right. Yeah, they said it was like at the 50-minute mark. Right. So
it was about seven, eight minutes.
Okay. It was great. I think that was some of the best wrestling. Also, though, I still had some nitpicky issues with it, but I guess we'll get into that later. But other than that, the 75 minutes, you know what? If you're going to complain about it, there's definitely room to. Nothing glaringly made me think the match was bad because, if you know, there was a comedy spot where all four heels were in the Tree of Woe and then they all four guys did simultaneous drop kicks on them. Did they show that on TV? I'm thinking they would because it was a pretty big comedy spot. Like,
I think so.
Huh.
I don't remember. No, you know, I mean, again, there's a lot that got hacked.
That's one of those spots that I thought they would show because it was very crowd-pleasing. All four champions were in the corners hanging the Tree of Woe, and all four guys, you know, held together and drop-kicked, not each one individually, all four guys kick. And it was good. People liked it. I will say the crowd reacted pretty well to it, and I kind of thought that would make it on TV. So anyway, nothing took me out of the match so badly that it was a poor match. It was good, and of course the effort by all eight men, tremendous. Yeah, that's just kind of my overall thoughts. I do, and I think Jerome may touch on this. So Michael Elgin gets a title shot against everyone now? He's like the ultimate champion?
Michael Elgin should absolutely be getting title shots against everyone.
Yeah, I don't
have a problem. Well, there we go.
He won the match. He beat the champion. And now he
beat
the champion.
All four champions.
Yeah, he beat all of them. So, yeah, look, you can have the complaint if you want that, oh, Michael Elgin
is... To be clear, I'm not complaining. I'm just mentioning that.
I'm sorry if I use that word. Maybe I shouldn't have. But, you know, people will say, I think, oh, they're going to title block Michael Elgin. And I think, you know, maybe that is a possibility that, you know, there will come a point where people get sick of him. But right now, I think... they're doing everything in their power to make him appear tough and keep it going, probably until Supercard of Honor at WrestleMania weekend 2014.
Some of those doubled moves that he did, like carrying Bobby Fish and Adam Cole, my God, he is the strongest man in the world.
They're great, and I love the finish. I love the Gibson. It's basically the first time they've done a Gibson bomb off the top rope, I think, since Gibson won the title against Punk. So I love that move. I love the Super Bomb move. And it was completely appropriate because these guys have really taken each other to the limit in Ring of Honor during the title match and then during this final stretch. So, yeah, I don't have a problem with Elgin going over at all. I think the whole thing has been, you know, the last few months have been this triangle war between, you know, Jay Briscoe, who feels he's wronged and has, you know, gone a little bit loco and starts to stake a claim for a championship that he really doesn't have a claim on anymore. But at the same time, he wasn't ever pinned or submitted, so he is sort of still the champion. Yeah, Michael Elgin, who has now, I mean, he's gone through several opportunities, but he's earned the opportunity again. And you've got Adam Cole, who is the guy who went through the tournament and won the tournament, you know, honorably, even though now he's sort of in it for himself. You know, his actions afterwards have been telling a different story, but I honestly feel Ring of Honor has built up the title match to final battle very well, that everybody's got a stake and everybody's got a claim to be in that heavyweight title match. So yeah, I have no problem with Elgin going over here whatsoever.
I'm not against Elgin going over. I'm against him losing another title match because it feels like...
Wait, so you don't think they're going to pull the trigger, Jerome? You think
I mean, Adam Cole's winning. There's no doubt in my mind about that.
I'm going for Adam Cole. I think Adam Cole's going to beat Jay Briscoe because I think Jay Briscoe is the low peg of this feud. And
right. And then Elgin can make the claim he's never been pinned.
Pinning Jay Briscoe, Adam Cole takes Jay Briscoe out of competition or out of contention for at least a short term. And then you can focus on Elgin saying, well, I wasn't pinned in that match. I wasn't submitted, so I should still have some contention. And then you can go towards an anniversary show or a Supercard of Honor show match.
But Jerome has a point. It does feel kind of long for Elgin to not be champion.
We literally have to wait 6 months for this to happen. And that's...
sort of been the MO for Ring of Honor for years now. And I don't think that's going to change. It isn't good.
Tyler Black was not good, Ari. And I think you were there live for a couple of those matches.
You're right. That wasn't good, but I think it is good that they do have some long-term plans. And I think, on the other hand, if Adam Cole were to lose that final battle to either Briscoe or Elgin, I think there would be people saying, why did you cut Adam Cole's legs out from under him? Why did you end his title reign so
soon? I think Adam
Cole
is a fine champ. I mean, my complaint isn't with Adam Cole. I think the bigger complaint is with Michael Elgin. I still think he's the one that should have beaten Steen, regardless of what happened in New York City with Jay Briscoe. I was not impressed with Jay Briscoe's title reign. I'm still not impressed with Jay Briscoe being involved in the title picture. I would have much rather have seen Michael Elgin beat Steen in Toronto and then have a few month title reign and lose to Cole.
That would have been an amazing end to Glory by Honor if they had done that. That would have been pretty cool.
I think
Jerome, it kind of sounds like you're saying that Adam Cole losing the title doesn't do as much harm as Michael Elgin not winning.
This is the very definition of booking yourself into a corner, because nobody except Jay Briscoe can afford to lose, and Jay Briscoe better be the one to get pinned. because I don't think he has any business in the title picture anymore.
Yeah.
I think when you look, I'm going to have, okay, personally, I agree with you, Jerome. I do want to play devil's advocate for a second because I think the Briscoes have been and may always be one of the most popular acts in Ring of Honor history. And I think, especially when they went to SBG and especially with the affiliates that they have right now, the Briscoes are the one of the most popular acts. They're good wrestlers and they're good characters. And I think, you know, when you, you know, I think there's been a purposeful strategy this year, especially ever since Jay Briscoe won the world title in April, to position each Briscoe as less on the tag team and more capable of being a singles, because I think at this point they are now more valuable as singles competitors. I think Jay Briscoe winning the world title helped solidify him in the upper card as a singles guy. And he's always been there. You know, we've talked about how he always did well in singles title matches. He never got the big title run. And I think that by winning the title, it sort of legitimized him for all the affiliates and the fans who watch on television. And Chris always says that there's a change now, but, you know, we're moving away from appealing all the time to the internet and appealing all the time to this DVD strategy, and now more to television. And I think the Briscoes play very well on television with their characters.
Especially if you look at where a lot of the stations are for SBG, kind of in that, you know, Midwest, Southern region. I mean, yeah, they have a channel over here in Oregon, you know, whatever.
The unfortunate situation happened with both Briscoe's real-life injury and the contract situation running out. But that was also a blessing in a way, because you turn this into an outsider angle. And I personally enjoy the hell out of all those promos where he was injured and not under contract necessarily. We weren't quite sure whether or not he was coming back. I thought that painting outside the box was special, in the same way that Kevin Steen's promos when he was sort of the outsider were special, because it was something different and edgy, and it didn't quite feel like he belonged.
It was better. It's better than the AJ Styles storyline going on right now. So
sure, we don't need to talk about that.
No, sure. But I kind of see what Jerome is saying, though, because it's like you can have Adam Cole, and yeah, I think you're right, Ari. People will say, why did you take the legs out from him? Because he is such a good heel right now. It would be kind of not weird, but, you know, it would feel like they kind of shortchanged him. But I think he could survive that because he's Adam Cole. He's
My other point, I mean, because obviously Cole, Elgin, and Briscoe are position, being positioned. Steen has been downplayed a little bit. The Wolves have been downplayed a little bit because, you know, we knew that they were leaving. And this goes back to Jerome and I talking about talent depth to a certain extent. I think the Briscoes needed to be split off into singles to sort of help buoy that talent depth situation and give them another upper card guy who they can depend on. And I think Jay Briscoe is, I mean, obviously, like David Richards, he's a controversial guy outside of the ring, but in the ring, he's dependable and he's really, really good. And so I'm not saying give him the title again, but I am not averse to the way they've been using him. And yeah, I would say, yes, he does need to lose to Cole to kind of spin him off. But again, I think there's been some very purposeful reasons why he's been booked the way he's been booked, both during his run as champion and now. And I think it's because he's just freaking popular. And Ring of Honor would be foolish not to take advantage of that. You know, in a time when a lot of guys are leaving and coming back and not, you know, you need to hold on to and use the guys that are, you know, that can draw. And I think the Briscoes, and especially Jay Briscoe, draws a lot, house shows and television ratings-wise. So that's just my opinion.
I mean, I think that the biggest problem that Ring of Honor has right now is the talent depth. And if they are relying on the Briscoes as main event singles wrestlers, then I'm not sure if that's going to benefit Ring of Honor long term, because these guys have been around for a number of years. There's a lot of mileage there, and you know,
and
I understand.
They still seem fresh. I think Jay Briscoe is in his new character is very fresh.
I mean, I don't think my bigger issue actually with this would be Mark Briscoe, but I think Jake Briscoe is still perfectly fine.
Yeah, Mark's kind of, he's just there. And Silas Young better beat him in this strap match, because I'm just saying, I'm not saying I have anything against Mark, but Silas Young, I think, is much more the future of Ring of Honor than
I think that, you know, I think that the Jake Briscoe story was very nice to bring him in and have him win the championship, but you know, I think that they did it for a pop. They did it for the moment in New York City, and maybe that alone justifies it. But you know, I think it's time to transition him out, and I think Final Battle is the time to do that. But you know, I want to get this talent depth thing in a little bit more in depth, because I'm gonna spoil. I assume this is gonna air on television, but Cedric Alexander and Caprice Coleman, they lost to Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly for the Ring of Honor tag team titles, correct, Chris? And I believe this is airing on TV?
Yes, it will be airing on TV. And I want to say it's their, like, third title chance. So
this has been the worst booked feud in the history of the company, because all Caprice Coleman and Cedric Alexander do.
Whoa, what a hyperbole right there. Holy shit.
Okay, maybe not the worst ever. Maybe the second worst. I mean, come on. The Carnage Crew and Dunn and Marco still number one.
Special or the, K or Ring of Honor.
Special K.
we'll go with that. Or the Special K feud. So it's at least number three. But so Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly, they just beat these guys all the time. And just like Christian, Coleman and Alexander, all they want is one more match. Right, guys?
Just one more. Come on.
Just one more.
Well, there's no more. But they're going their singles way now. That's what I was kind of saying in the match. It did feel that once Cedric was eliminated, that Caprice was kind of like, well, you know what? I'm going into business for myself, which I guess he should within the context, but I don't know. That's just me.
We need heel preacher Caprice Coleman.
That's my big issue with this, with Coleman and Alexander, is you do a split, and instead of doing something interesting, you just have them break amicably. What tag team in professional wrestling has ever broken up amicably?
Daniel Bryan and CM Punk just now.
Very but few.
They were like a one-off team.
But to me, they broke up?
They're split off or whatever. Look, whatever.
Really? Huh. Spoilers. I didn't know that.
To me, you have this depth issue, and obviously the tag team division is going to desperately need some help very soon, given Coleman and Alexander splitting up and, you know, the Briscoes being in singles, no more American Wolves. But to me, you could have done something interesting where either Alexander or Coleman, if they go heel, I think there's something interesting you can do with a potential feud with these guys, but instead Ring of Honor doesn't have anything interesting happen. And I think, you know, if you do Coleman and Alexander, if you do a split or even one of them turns heel, I think you're adding a little bit of juice to Final Battle, and neither guy is actually booked for the card. So I'm not sure what this end game for Coleman and Alexander is. Because I think, particularly Alexander, I think Alexander has a lot of potential in this company going into next year. And I think he's someone that could potentially be built around as either a heel or babyface. And it just feels like something potentially interesting for Final Battle, even as an undercard match, was simply ignored. And they did whatever they did with the split.
I don't know. I'm not so outraged about the split at all. I think when you talk about amicable splits, there's a time in WWE when, I mean, their tag team division was so horrible for such a long time, and it just seemed like, you know, they would combine tag teams and then have one of them turn on the other, and then there'd be like two more tag teams left in the division, and then they would just start the process over and over again. I almost yearn for the days when tag teams could amicably split and go off and do their own thing. And, you know, you didn't have to make a big deal out of it. And not knowing Caprice's, you know, long-term plans as a wrestler, I don't know that doing a heel turn right out of the gate would have been advisable. I think maybe you could go back later, and if they do turn one of them, you know, it would be an interesting revisit for 2014 to have them face each other. But I don't think you don't necessarily need a betrayal split or a heel turn split like we've seen so many times before over so many different promotions. So to me, this seemed almost like a breath of fresh air that, you know, CNC had their run and they didn't quite make it to the tag titles. And so, you know, you go do your own thing. And I still think they're, you know, maybe the tag team division, as far as in Ring of Honor, you know, stable tag teams, you know, like consistently booked tag teams, they may be running a little bit low. But I think if you, you know, you put into consideration, you know, the Forever Hooligans, if they come back as special attraction in 2014, and you've got the Young Bucks who make the big shows for Ring of Honor, and then I'm sure they'll be on this. You know, I think the biggest unfortunate situation was what's it called? I forgot their official tag name, but Josh Alexander's the tag team
Monster Mafia.
I think the biggest tragedy was their issues with the border and having problems, you know, because I really think that they could have been a great new addition to the regular tag team roster in 2013, 2014. And now I think that's very much in flux. But you still have Adrenaline Rush. I think you've got Red Dragon together as a team. You've got Outlaw Inc. You've got Artie Evans and QT on the undercard. And I think you can build out of that.
Wait, is Artie Evans and QT still a tag team? Because didn't QT just do some FIP shows? And
I'm not sure.
Chris,
not
people sure. have to watch the FIP shows for that to matter. So
maybe you know that.
No, but what I mean is that I haven't seen QT on most Ring of Honor shows. I'm just saying.
I'm just judging based because I may not have mentioned this on here yet, but I just went through like about 2 months worth of television in about 8 hours of time here today. So I saw them together teaming up against Outlaw Inc. So I'm wrong about that. But I still, like, my point is still, there's still enough tag teams in Ring of Honor that can be built up, and the special attractions help add the depth to it. So they may be at an ebb right now, but I think we're not at a critical junction for all that yet. I'm not going to worry about it yet.
I mean, I think for me, when I look at the Ring of Honor's roster of heels, the list is very, very short. I mean, it's Adam Cole, it's Michael Bennett, it's QT Marshall, Artie Evans, Matt Taven. The heel list is so short. And
Red Dragon's a heel. Red Dragon's the heel. And Outlaw Inc. is kind of there's something.
Nobody knows what Outlaw Inc. is. So, and I think that's a problem, partially. But when you look at the heel roster, it's very, very small. And I think the argument that I would make for an Alexander and Coleman split is, assuming the Coleman is not going to be a full-timer, then I think you can turn Alexander heel. You can get some mileage out of that. You can help out that desperately needed heel at part of the company with Cedric Alexander. Because again, I think he's the guy that you want to push and he's the guy that you want to emphasize. And given that I think there's a lot more traction on the heel side. I think a certain future TV champion is going to need some people to feud with. I just feel like Cedric Alexander going heel for this situation, I thought Alexander going heel on Coleman would have been something interesting, and it would have given Coleman something to do right from the get-go. And when it comes to the tag team division,
maybe,
you know, the Young Bucks are not going to be signing Ring of Honor contracts anytime soon, especially given that they're wrestling for New Japan Pro Wrestling. So I don't think you can reliably rely on them. You know, I think we can all agree at a certain point that Chikara is going to be back in 2014. It has that feeling. And because of that, I'm not confident that Eddie Kingston, and even just based on his history, Eddie Kingston's history with Ring of Honor and so many other independent promotions, I'm not confident that this guy is going to be around long enough. And with ACH and TD Thomas, you know, these guys have lost a lot of matches together, and they've lost a lot in singles. And, you know, these guys have wrestled a little bit in singles recently. So we'll have to see where that tag team goes. And if you eliminate Outlaw Inc. and you eliminate the Adrenaline Rush, and all of a sudden you've really only got a couple of full-time tag teams. So I think the tag team division and really the entire roster, I think this speaks to the talent depth issues. You know, I think there's still a lot of really good wrestlers on this roster. I wouldn't say that, you know, it's a complete dearth of talent, but I think when you're trying to run house shows, when you're trying to run a weekly television show, having such a small roster can get very problematic because there's only so many combinations that you can put these guys into. And you don't want to run into a situation where you're just doing rematches because, you know, I think that's an even bigger problem when you're just doing the same matches. As, you know, I think there's at least two matches on the final battle card that are return match from Glory by Honor. And, you know, I think it's just a real problem. So,
as far as the rematches, I think that's true, but I think there are higher stakes rematches as opposed to just, you know, one for one rematches where there's no upping the ante. So like the stretcher match with Steen and Bennett and the strap match with Briscoe and Silas. They're rematches, but they're there for a reason because the feuds have been elevated. So, I mean, to be fair, having just seen a whole bunch of the TV shows, I didn't see a lot of repeats, and maybe that's because they were using the big shows, but I don't know. I think that they've sort of figured out the game, which is have a core roster, have special guest stars like Ricky Marvin, and, you know, even bring in guys that, you know, maybe you and I don't like Mike Wando and stuff like that to kind of fill in when you need. But I don't see necessarily the same talent depth issues on the upper card. I would agree with you about the heel stuff. They are weak on the heel side. But overall, I think they've got enough on the mid to upper card to kind of keep them going into 2014. And then they can always add new people if they need.
Maybe this is enough for television, and if Ring of Honor is a television company, then that's fine. But when you're trying to run all of these, when you're running house shows and, you know, you've got Alabama Attitude or another one of some of these guys that are just mm-hmm. being used as filler, that's where I think the right. problem is. And I know, okay. you know, again,
I agree with that.
And if Ring of Honor is a TV company, then that's fine. But you might as well just throw in the towel on house shows if you're going to be presenting that, because I mean the live fans are still going to go in places like Chattanooga and Birmingham where maybe there aren't as many entertainment options as a Chicago or New York City. But are people really going to be spending $15 for a stream or $20 for a DVD for some of these house shows? Because I don't see it, especially when you can get DVDs on Smart Mark Video for $15. And you can go to High Spots and get PWG DVDs for $15. I don't see it.
Okay, locally, I don't think that's a problem because I think they come for the ROH name and the bigger ROH stars. So if they have guys like Raymond Rowe on the undercard, I don't think the people who are at these venues are going to be complaining too much. But I do agree that, I mean, I'm not invested in buying too many house show DVDs these days. And I think, I mean, if you look at a card like the Road to Greatness nights, and compare them to the the Golden Dream show. I mean, just the you see the complete difference in terms of quality, and you know you've got one set where you've got you know some of the upper card, but then a lot of the local talent versus a card where you've got like everybody who's the strong side on Ring of Honor who does, you know, you got stack cards, stack matches. So you definitely see the difference on some of these house show DVDs. And yes, that is a problem. That is definitely a problem. But I mean, as far as as you say, for a TV product, it's not a problem because they know how to use their TV to push their big shows, their house shows. So I mean, it's again a change in how they've done business over the last couple of years.
All right, so let's finally get into this final battle discussion. I think we've talked extensively about Adam Cole, Michael Elgin, and Jay Briscoe. We'll get some final predictions on that. But let's go bottom to top. In a strap match, Mark Briscoe is going to be wrestling Silas Young, and this is obviously a rivalry that's been built up to an extent. I guess, my thing with Silas Young is I'm glad that he's on the Ring of Honor roster. I think this is a long time coming. But he's been in two of the shortest matches in Ring of Honor history the last few weeks on television, losing to Jimmy Jacobs in 3 seconds after cutting a promo. And then that match against Jay Briscoe, where Mark Briscoe interfered, but Jay Briscoe was a babyface. That was really strange. To me, Silas Young needs to win this. And we talk about that heel roster being so thin. Silas Young, there's literally no reason that he shouldn't be pushed into the upper mid card going into next year. And I'm going to say Silas Young is going to win. Ari, maybe you could give your thoughts on how Silas has been booked on TV. Yes, but
No. I think if there's one thing I definitely agree with you and Chris on for sure, it's that the booking of Silas Young in some situations have been an absolute travesty. I mean, this guy can really be a great mid-card, upper-card heel for them. And I mean, you're just speaking about the lack of heels. And I really think this real man's thing, he's done it so well. And I know you guys, especially Jerome, you've seen him really at the top of his game in the Midwest. And I just, to see him job out to Jimmy Jacobs in 3 seconds, it was entertaining, but it does him no favors. And I do like that this is sort of like a bit of a quiet mid-card feud with him and Mark Briscoe. And they sort of turned it into, it hasn't been a heated grudge match, but there's been some good stuff between the two. And I think it'll be a good early match in the show, but I don't see Silas Young winning here. I think Silas got some heat on Mark in a previous match, strapping him. And I think this is Mark's turn to win. So I'm going to give the win to Mark. Although I personally think that, like with some other talents on the roster, they are severely misjudging how much they should use the talent. I mean, Silas Young can really be used more than he is, and I think he's a quality wrestler in the ring, and he definitely can put in the ring time and give you a really good match. So I really like to see in 2014 him come into his own in Ring of Honor, or at least let them give him the opportunity. They've given him the character, and his character has succeeded. Give him the in-ring opportunity to steal the show and start to build up himself on the heel side. And I think people will be very appreciative of that. We'll say a lot of good things about it. But Chris, I don't see him winning.
Chris, you're going to have to break the tie here.
I'm gonna break it for Jerome. I think Silas Young gets the win on a big show, which is Final Battle, and then maybe Mark gets it on the next couple house shows, whatever. I think I've said enough about Silas Young. I think he deserves the push. So,
all right, this match, I don't even know how to predict this, but it is the IWGB Junior Tag Team Champions, the Young Bucks of Nick and Matt Jackson versus Adrenaline Rush, ACH, and Tadarius Thomas. If not for the fact that they were the IWGB Junior Heavyweight Tag Team Champions, I would honestly consider picking ACH and Tadarius Thomas. But based on the fact that Adrenaline Rush has not won a match in seemingly forever, especially against the Ring of Honor roster, and the fact that the Young Bucks are the tag team champions in IWGP, and they have such a reputation, I think it almost is unrealistic to me to have ACH and Tadarius Thomas win. So I am going to say the Young Bucks. And if given time, this could be the best match on the show. I bet they only get about 12 minutes, and it'll still be very good. Chris, go
yeah,
ahead.
No, I would say you could just book it as the Young Bucks win, but Adrenaline Rush really shows something. Like, give them the time to put in a really good match. And, you can always be made, even in a loss. And especially the Young Bucks, you don't lose anything by losing to them. So, I think the Young Bucks get the win, but I certainly think ACH and Tadarius Thomas should get the time to do something special. That's how I'd book it.
Go ahead, Ari.
I think the fans are going to love this match. This is going to be so much fun. The Young Bucks have their heel act down. They know how to make the faces. The fans want to see the faces just kick their asses, and I think we're going to see that absolutely. This, and again, like you guys said, if this gets any amount of time, it's going to be an early show stealer, and I really hope it does. But I'm going to give the win to the Young Bucks, like you guys are, and I think that ACH and TD get put over in the loss. But you know, for me, this is one of the, like I said earlier, this is one of the reasons why I'm going to go to the show, because I think this match could rule really big time. So I'm looking forward to it.
All right. Up next is a special tag team match where we don't know one of the participants, but I'm going to speculate, and for the sake of argument, say that it will be Jimmy Jacobs and Eddie Edwards versus Jay Lethal and Roderick Strong. Do we all think it's going to be Jimmy Jacobs?
No, you say speculate, but you know, in reality, you and I have both seen that tweet that Jimmy Jacobs has said. So it's speculation with a hint of prior knowledge there. I don't think it's going out on a limb too much at this point, because I think when Jacobs has that kind of kayfabe tweet in there, unless they go severely into a swerve and like give us Chris Hero, which I don't think they will, but hey, you never know.
Guys are lucky that Chris Hero is at Cage of Death, otherwise
still Philadelphia, right? Philadelphia, so New York, not too bad, not too shabby.
Chris Hero is in the semi-main event of Cage of Death. Not happening.
Okay, then they can clone. They can clone him. Well, you've seen The Prestige, so you know it's possible. It's happened with R.D. Evans.
I will say, though, I think Eddie Edwards and his tag team partner win. Whoever they are.
I'm trying to scramble for something here.
I'm going to say that it's funny. Before if Jimmy Jacobs wasn't in this match, you basically had three guys who potentially could not be with Ring of Honor full time in 2014, given the fact that Roderick Strong is going to be wrestling for FIP and he's going to be wrestling in Evolve in January. So it's very interesting to me, based on the fact that Jay Lethal is going to be on the Ring of Honor roster going into 2014. I am going to say that he pins Eddie Edwards. So Strong and Lethal are my pick.
I mean, Jacobs has never been really booked strongly in Ring of Honor, although I really liked his trial series. I thought that was sort of, he's really like, he shined a lot in that. And, Edwards on the way out, so I agree with you, Jerome. And it's interesting. This match is like, we don't have a place for you on this card, and we know Edwards is leaving. So just get in there and just do your thing. And I'm sure it'll be fine. But to me, it really does seem a bit of a mishmash. And I mean, obviously Richards was supposed to be here, and it would have been better. But for the Wolves to go out together. But you do what you can, and I think I'm going to say Lethal goes over Edwards here as we wind down Edwards here, and goodbye horses, you know.
And Chris, you predicted that Edwards and Jacobs would win, right?
Sure. I'm just going to go out there and say it. Don't care.
Oh, boy.
I really care about this next match, though, Jerome, because someone is going to stop using the pile driver.
Guys, I got to tell you, I am so excited for this. The loser must stop using the pile driver. Kevin Steen, who has used the F-Sank to win matches, versus Michael Bennett, who I believe has won a whopping one match with the pile driver. But guys, someone must stop using the pile driver after this.
It's all on the line.
And it's a stretcher match. Two gimmicks in one. Yes.
It is literally all on the line here. Kevin Steen is wrestling Michael Bennett. Kevin Steen wins, right, guys? I mean, that's where we're going here.
I say this without being cynical. I really, both of these guys, I think could have a fantastic match. And I mean, what, Ari, like 2 years ago, we would have never said that about Bennett. But you know what? It could be a fun match. But I mean, I don't know. Bennett wins?
I don't know. What?
Kevin Steen has the F-Sync, and he uses the sharpshooter. So,
and Michael Bennett has the box office smash.
Did Jim Cornette suddenly regain booking power, and now we can't use the pile driver anymore?
Mike Mondo, what is going on? Run in during this match, and then you'll know your answer.
Okay, here's what's going to happen. They're going to be both fighting on the stretcher, and Maria is going to roll them both down to the line. And they both will not be able to use the package pile driver or the pile driver anymore. That's it. They both lose.
There you go.
So what's your actual prediction, Ari?
Steam.
All right. Chris is the outlier here. And
I don't,
Chris, you are not going to do very well on this show.
Hey, you know what? People said I wasn't going to do well when I said that Briscoe was going to win the title. So we'll see.
That's true.
Well, all right. For the Ring of Honor World Tag Team titles, it will be Bobby Fish and Kyle O'Reilly defending against Outlaw Inc., Homicide, and Eddie Kingston. If you want to know who the heels and baby faces are, well, I kind of do too. I don't know who I'm supposed to root for, but I am fairly confident that in order to push this angle forward, Outlaw Inc. needs to win. So I'm going to say that Homicide and Eddie Kingston will win his first ever Ring of Honor title, and then when he is about to lose the tag team titles, Ring of Honor security will run in the ring and the company will be shut down.
Oh, wrong company.
Is that the wrong company?
It might be.
No, that sounds right to me.
All right, go ahead. Who's going to win?
Yeah, in New York City, they've been building up Outlaw Inc. I mean, ever since Manhattan Mayhem 5. And yeah, you're right. For this angle to work, for us to really know what Kingston and Homicide and what the true intentions are from them, their true agenda, that they're going to have to win the titles and then either stick it to Nigel or, I don't know, something big might have to happen. But I think the era of the Dragon is coming to an end. The Dragon is going to lose. And, I mean, I don't know if this will be a great match necessarily. I think Fish and O'Reilly are great workhorses. Kingston and Homicide have been motivated of late, but it's always a bit, you know, it's always a bit sketchy because, you know, they're brawlers and sometimes that doesn't mesh with technical guys. So we'll see. We'll see. I like both guys, though, and both of them hailing from New York. So I'll be cheering them on. They're the faces to me, guys. They might be rapscallions and tough necks, but you know what? They're New York, and I love New York.
I think the fans are definitely going to be rooting for Kingston and Homicide. That should be a no doubt in anyone's mind. So no,
if they lose, I think it would just be it would make a good show horrible because it'd be like, oh, come on. So I'm also predicting Outlaw Inc. to win, by the way.
I think this is ludicrous. This match and the TV title match, I think it's ludicrous if there aren't title changes. Chris, are you making it unanimous for the tag team title?
Yes. Though I am not making it unanimous for the next one. You just, you kind of foreshadowed your pick there. I don't agree on
Chris,
that.
Chris, if Tommaso does not beat Matt Taven, there should be riots.
Okay, my question is this. It's not so much I don't think he should win. It's when he wins, what happens to Matt Taven? Because are any of us going to want a rematch?
Dies. He goes into outer space. He returns to
Matt Taven has been the television champion for 8 months, and that belt literally means nothing.
I think they put it out there that he is the longest reigning TV champion by the time.
No, I think it's if he beats Ciampa, then he's the longest reigning champion.
Oh, how could
I don't see it? I think this is a slam dunk. If I were booking this, Ciampa would give him the Ultimate Warrior Honky Tonk Man treatment.
Yes,
we can't.
That would be fantastic.
Like there's no reason Ciampa should win in 30 seconds, and you should build this guy as the killer in this company.
Then what?
That's what I would do.
This is how it's got to go. Knee strike, big running knee strike, Kryptonite crunch, Project Ciampa over 45 seconds.
That's what it should be. I mean, there's no excuse. Matt Taven is
perfectly. Would you follow a title change? And then follow it with another title change, even a quick
absolutely,
one?
Absolutely. Okay.
Why would you?
Because then that kind of translates what you're going to do in the world title match.
No, it doesn't. It actually, I mean, I don't think it does at all.
You kind of put that in flux. I don't know. I just can't see them doing a trifecta and changing all three titles.
Well, I don't think they are either, but that doesn't mean you can't do two title changes in one night.
Okay.
Especially when it actually makes sense.
Yeah.
Okay.
Like challengers in the TV title in the World Tag Team title match, they need to win.
Sense.
They have to.
No, they do. They do have to win.
Angles make sense.
Yeah, but so as we've seen with Ring of Honor, wins don't always necessarily mean title changes. So
I mean, just look, if they book this incorrectly, then they're really really dumb. Like they are.
It could happen.
That's all I'm saying. I'm just playing devil's advocate for that because we've seen where it's like, oh yeah, it's totally happening. Oh,
I know that Ring of Honor
is
dumb, but the way that they have built this on television And the way that they built Ciampa, I mean, Ciampa comes across as a bigger star than almost anyone else on that roster at this point. With
he's Taz. He's Taz at this point. He's the guy who has good music, comes out, great entrance, kills people.
You're giving this guy a TV title match so he can win, and you can consider him for the Ring of Honor title at the end of Final Battle 2014. That to me is what they're doing here.
Really? Yeah. You're already booking Final Battle 2014?
I was suggesting that Ciampa wins this belt so you can prepare him for a possible Ring of Honor World title run.
That means he beats Elgin. Just saying.
Chris, what are you doing?
Elgin would be champion by Final Battle 2014, and
I mean, maybe. Yeah, who knows?
Come on.
Michael Elgin's going to be in Ring of Honor at the end of 2014.
That's a good point.
But I don't see it. If you want this angle, particularly with the tag title change, if you want the angle to work, then Outlaw and Cast win. Yes. And in the TV title match, Matt Taven hasn't done anything with the title. Can we name a really memorable TV title match? Maybe the TV match against Jay Lethal. But
I was just about to say, that's like the only one that came to
that's
mind.
That's really the only one. And that match wasn't that spectacular.
Wasn't he in a three-way that was really good? I don't remember who.
Matt Taven's done a lot of three-ways that were really good. Unfortunately, we haven't seen any of them.
Oh, God, Jerome.
Someone had to go there.
Oh, hoopla.
So I think that about covers it. And we did officially make our picks for the main event, right?
I think it's a clean sweep. I think we've all said that Adam Cole is going to retain the Ring of Honor World title, correct?
And pinned Jay. Like
I'm going to say he pins Elgin, and they're going to do Cole against Briscoe.
Wow.
Title for title at the anniversary show.
Oh, another unification? Jesus.
Yep. I thought we were going to have two unification matches. I thought that's where we were headed. I thought Briscoe and Cole were going to have a unification ladder match. That actually still could happen.
No.
If it happens at, say, Supercard of Honor in front of, like, a WrestleMania crowd, yeah, I could see that. That'd be...
I think Elgin's winning.
You think Elgin's winning at Supercard of Honor, so the unification match happens some house show. You know.
12th anniversary show.
Yeah, there you go.
So anything else, gentlemen, about Ring of Honor? Any other additional thoughts about this card or anything else?
Notice that Cedric Alexander and Caprice Coleman don't have a match on this card. Just saying. After all, we talked about them for a good 10 minutes. They have no match.
I mean, they filled the quota with adrenaline rush, so I guess they don't, you know.
Let's hope no Mike Mondo on the show.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I think Mike Mondo should wrestle QT Marshall just to break the internet.
Oh,
I think QT Marshall should face Mike Mondo, and Icarus should be thrown in there just for fun. That would be.
I wouldn't mind seeing Icarus.
Oh, right. Yeah, he's not booked anymore. Too bad.
Icarus, you are not getting booked.
There you go.
Ari, anything else?
Nope, not really. I think you guys pretty much nailed it. And I'm looking forward to the show.
You're going to have a fun time. See, that's what I was talking about before, is that if you just told someone this lineup and you didn't mention Ring of Honor by name, I think people would say this is a really fantastic card. And then you say Ring of Honor, and for some reason, I don't know, people just don't get it. The buzz isn't there. It's weird.
Indeed. I am praying for no snow blizzards or 1 hour draws, but or Dan Severn appearing and like slapping the hell out of Michael Elgin or something. If we can avoid these whammies, then I think we will all have a good time.
Tito Ortiz is going to be a Final Battle. There you go.
No.
I said it.
Guys, at least Ring of Honor isn't running middle school gyms. That's all I can say.
That is very true.
Not yet, they're not.
So ominous, Ari Berenstein. So ominous.
Just wait.
I mean,
yo, you know what they should do? They should do that car dealership that Charlie Haas was
right.
in.
Oh, right, yeah.
They should do, like, that WCW Junkyard Brawl thing, but, like, with I don't know, you know,
that'd
Bobby
be another
Dempsey.
Silas Young Mark Briscoe match, and Mark Briscoe could like jump off one of the cars.
I think they could book Mike Track just for it.
Yeah,
so it's in both.
Awesome.
Yes. There you go.
And that'd be great TV.
Didn't Finley win? Didn't Finley win after a car exploded?
I think he killed William Regal.
That sounds familiar.
I think they William Regal became the $6 million man. They like surgically repaired him after that match. I don't know.
I just gotta say this. I just have to throw this in there. I know we've been talking about, but I just have to throw this out there. Imagine if the Briscoes had been signed to WWE, and if it happens, as the rumors say, the Wolves go to NXT or would WWE.
You mean the Pistons?
Crazy. Yeah. Crazy. Just crazy to think about. Anyway,
they wouldn't be the Briscoes though. They would be like the
Marks. No, the yeah. I don't know how they would do this. You cannot reverse those names and make it make sense.
Yeah. The Homophones.
Oh, wow! Like that, like
I said, homophones, not homophobes. No,
yes.
Crazy. All right.
All right, Berenstein, go ahead and plug what you plug.
Sure. I believe before the end of the year, we're going to get at least one more retrocast, and we do that on PW Ponderings. So check that out. I believe we'll get to that before the end of the year, like I said. And if you want to check out, I believe I'll be on one of Larry Kasanka's podcasts on 411. We're recording on December 11th, so that will also be my final battle preview. So, you know, maybe it'll be the same things I say here. Maybe it'll be completely different. You never know. So that's what I got coming up, and you can check me out on Twitter at Ari Berenstein, and A-R-I-B-E-R-E-N-S-T-E-I-N.
I always thought that was a silent S at the front of his name.
Berenstein.
Chris, what do you do for the website?
I do a lot of things for the website. I'll be having, by the time you listen to this, I should have already recorded and hopefully have uploaded later on in the evening, a podcast with DJ Hyde talking Cage of Death. And I have a couple articles in the new Total Wrestling Magazine. Of course, as I mentioned before, twmag@co.uk. I know it's long. Or you can just look up Total Wrestling Magazine on Facebook. And I'll have a couple articles up. I don't know if they'll be up by the end of the year, but I will effort to have them up. But I am also doing a VWAA podcast for PW Ponderings coming next week.
If you're looking for the Total Wrestling Mag, just look for any of the magazines with Davey Richards' spin on it. So that's how you can find them very easily.
American Nipples.
There you go.
Twitter.com/PWPonderings is the place to find all of our wonderful, wonderful results, links to articles, news, all that good stuff. So make sure you go to Twitter.com/PWPonderings. We also have the weekly newscast, which you can enjoy with Dez and Chris. They will no doubt be talking about AEW, AIW, and a whole lot more.
Yes. Oh, actually, and also our special guests for tomorrow are Wiggy and Yolanda from Gimmicks. So that should be, as I mentioned on Twitter, a fun time. Jerome, we may actually talk about Total Divas on PW Ponderings. Be excited.
I will be sure not to listen. Anyway, Kevin Ford did a fantastic fan-to-fan with Dr. Keith Lipinski that you should all be listening to immediately after you get done if you've not done so. Ari Berenstein, damn it, you need to listen to the show. You're going to listen, right?
For Dr. Keith, absolutely.
Excellent.
And for maybe even for Kevin Ford.
Kevin Ford. That's okay. Acceptable. So check out Fan to Fan. It comes out every Thursday night on the iTunes and on Friday on the main website. And speaking of iTunes, make sure you leave those 4 or 5-star reviews. Go to iTunes. It will make us all very, very happy if you do that. Gets the algorithms going. It helps people find out about what we do here at pwponderings.com. I do reviews every week, everything from the wonderful Shine promotion to AAW to PWG and whatever else strikes my fancy. In addition to all of that, go to highspots.com, use the link on pwponderings.com. When you click on that link to High Spots, you're going to be helping to support what we do here on this website, pay some bills, and you're going to get some great quality DVDs from companies like PWX and PWG, Shibber, Dragon Gate USA. Because of Black Friday and Christmas coming up, they're going to be sales. So you definitely want to bookmark High Spots. And speaking of sales, Amazon.com, also a link in the bottom right-hand corner. Definitely click on that for all of your DVD, Blu-ray player, whatever else, whatever the kids are getting this this time of year. So Amazon, High Spots, the links on pwponderings.com. For Chris GST and for Ari Bernstein, I'm Jerome Cuson. You've been listening to the Podcast of Honor. Thanks for listening. Even the sign, the best people you find, strong and feeble in mind. I stay reading the signs.